All right. Well, it's good to be here with you this morning. We got a draft blowing in. It was kind of warm in here this morning. It's warmer in the back, just so you know. If you're hot back there, it's cooler up here. So that's available for you if you like. What do you think it takes to be blessed by Jesus? What does it take? Does anybody here maybe don't want to be blessed? Everybody would like to be blessed by Jesus, right? What does it take to be blessed? I'm going to suggest that the one thing it takes is faith. The one thing it takes to be blessed, The one thing it takes to be blessed by Jesus is faith. We're going to see that in Mark today. If you come to Jesus believing he is the one who can help you, he will help you. But the converse is also true. If you really don't believe he's going to do anything for you, he probably won't. Faith is that thing that God has given us that opens the door for Jesus to act in your life. If you want Jesus to act in your life, if you want him to be involved in your life, faith is required. So this morning we're going to witness Jesus' interaction with two very different people who come to Jesus desperate for his help. That's going to be encouraging. And then we're going to see his interaction with a whole group of people who are convinced he has nothing to offer. And that's going to be a little bit of a warning. So what I want you to see and be encouraged by is that Jesus is going to help anybody who comes to him in faith. Anybody. Not just the rich, not just the poor, not just the people of Jesus' day, but also the people of our day. Jesus wants to be involved in our lives. Open your Bible to Mark chapter 5. We're going to start out with verses 21 through the end of the chapter. Mark chapter 5, if you have the Bibles we provide, it's page 710. Mark chapter 5. Let's just pray to start off. Lord, I pray that you would strengthen our faith through the record of your love for people and your power to help. I pray that you'd encourage us through these stories of how you've worked in others' lives and that you would bless us too by working uniquely in ours. In Jesus' name. Amen. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue rulers, named Jairus, came there. Seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so she will be healed and live." And Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She'd suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." While Jesus was still speaking, some men came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Ignoring what they said, Jesus told the synagogue ruler, "Don't be afraid. Just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue ruler, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and walked around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. What does it take to be blessed by Jesus? It's faith. Don't be afraid. Just believe, Jesus said to Jairus after his daughter had already died. A couple weeks ago, we kind of went through a three-step process of understanding the Bible. Several of you made comments that you really appreciated that. So we're sort of going to do that again a little bit. Just to look at what happened here. Who remembers the three steps? Three steps to understanding the Bible. Who remembers one of them? I hear a whisper.
Observation. Interpretation. Application.
I know it's hard to speak out loud. Some of you remembered. You're like, no, I'm not going to say it. Observation. Interpretation. Application. Those three steps will help us understand what we're looking at and how it relates to our life. So we're going to start with observation again. We won't do the chalkboard thing this time, but what do we know about Jairus? He's the first guy who comes up. There are two situations, two stories, and there are two different people. So one is Jairus and one is a nameless woman. What do we know about Jairus? Make some observations. Look at what's there. What do we know about this guy and his situation? He's wealthy, leader of the synagogue. This is the place they come to worship, to discuss theological things. He's a religious leader of some sort, right? What else do we know about him? He's a father. Loves his daughter, right? Yeah. What else? What's his issue? He's in distress over the sickness of his daughter. Yeah. He's a leader in the community, right? Probably has some level of respect. And he believes Jesus can help. That's why he comes. I was noticing as we read through it today, this morning, how many times the phrase synagogue ruler comes up. This guy was a leader in the synagogue, and they want you to know that again and again and again. He's a synagogue ruler. If you think about the religious leaders of the day, that might ring some bells in your mind. Would he naturally be coming to Jesus? But he does. He does. There's something significant there. And then we have this rude interruption in the whole flow of this story, this guy who comes on behalf of his daughter. A woman, nameless woman, comes out of the crowd, stirs things up a little bit. What do we know about the woman? The unnamed woman. We don't know her name, do we? No. What do we know about her? You got to talk louder. Come on. She's been bleeding for 12 years. This is probably a female issue, okay? That's probably her issue. She's been bleeding for 12 years. So this is some kind of a sickness she has. We don't know exactly what it is. 12 years long. Have you been sick for a period of time? No. Anne's been struggling with like her throat and this issue. She's trying to diagnose for like 5 weeks. 5 weeks, okay? And it's bothering her a lot. Some of you have been ill for 12 years. 12 years sick. What else do we know about this woman? She's broke. She's been going after it. She hasn't just been laying around hoping it gets better. She's gone to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor until she had no money left. She may have been relatively well-to-do at the beginning. Not anymore. And one thing I read about the way medical treatment worked back then, it made it worse, not better. It didn't get any better, no better. One thing that I read was that one approach they would take is they would take a grain of oak out of a cow's dung and make the person swallow it. This should make you better. If you weren't sick before, you are now, right? So their approaches were a little bit different from how we approach things today. The lady is lonely. Why is she lonely? Yeah. Something that they don't mention this specifically, but she is unclean. Okay? Now that's a big deal in those days. She's been unclean for 12 years, which means she can't go to the temple to worship. She can't come here and sing and be together. She has to stay away from God and everyone else. She's been a social outcast for 12 years. Everybody's staying away from her. She's ritually, ceremonially unclean. God had laid out, this is what makes you unclean. And there are certain things that a lot of different things would happen to make you unclean. And if someone touched her, they would be unclean. So in that system, every month, a woman would be unclean for a while, and then she'd be clean again. That's how it was. Just, and she lived there, unclean. That's a big deal. That's a big issue in this, in how she approaches Jesus and touches him. It might have to do with why she wanted to sneak up behind him. If anybody found out she touched him, then that makes him unclean, right? He didn't get unclean, did he? He didn't get unclean by this touch. Interesting things going on here. So what happened when she touches Jesus' coat? She's in the crowd, pressing in around, taking a big risk, right? She's not supposed to be there. Touches Jesus. What happens? Boom. Healed immediately. The bleeding stopped. She felt it. She felt, I'm well. She knew it. Something happened she didn't expect, right? Jesus knew it too. Somebody touched me. And everybody's like, yeah. Right? Okay. What's your point? You're mobbed. They're in a crowd. Everybody's pressing in. The disciples are like, of course. Everybody's touching you, but somebody touched me. He's not talking about that. Somebody touched me in faith. I felt power go out of me. Who did it? Did Jesus know who did it? Is he clueless about this? He knew who did it. He knew who did it. There was a reason he did this. This is really, really cool. This is a really cool story. He stopped. Somebody touched me, and there's this awkward pause. Nobody's going to fess up. Like, we don't really know what you're saying. Like, nobody really knew what he's talking about this, except this one woman. I know he's pointing at me. She wanted to remain anonymous. She wanted to slip away undetected. She's just like, no. I'm not here just to heal your sickness. I want to interact with you. I care about you. That's why he stopped this whole thing. So he just patiently waited. Somebody touched me, and I'm not going anywhere and a girl is dying, right? He just waits. And finally, she breaks. Like, she bows at his feet. She's broken. She's terrified. I have been found out. I've made the master unclean. Like, this is, I don't know what's going to happen now. Jesus says, I love you. I love you. I don't want to just make you well. I want to draw near to you. I want to be close to you. We've kind of moved into, sorry, I had some other. You don't necessarily need to write all those down. You can read the story and get all that yourself. But I want to, I've moved into interpretation. When we're interpreting what's going on, we ask the question, why? Why did Jesus stop? Why did Jesus stop? He didn't have to, because the woman got what she came for. She got what she came for. He was kind of in a hurry to get to this girl before she died. So he could have just continued on. Why not leave her alone? She got what she came for. But he stopped because she mattered to him. She mattered just as much as Jairus, the synagogue ruler, and the daughter who was dying. A little bit of comparison to that man who was possessed by demons earlier in chapter 5. Everyone had rejected him, right? I mean, he lived in the cemetery. Stay away from this guy. We can't even lock him up. And Jesus spent some time with this guy. Another social outcast who Jesus loved. The other thing that Jesus does for this woman, I mean, he gives himself, he gives his love to her, and he also says, go in peace. Go in peace. If he hadn't said that, she may be having this nagging guilt of stealing a healing from Jesus. Jesus wanted her to know, you did not take a healing from me. It doesn't work that way. I gave this healing to you. Go in peace. You don't have to feel guilty about this. Go in peace. I gave you this because I love you. You snuck up on me, but you snuck up in faith. You believed that I could heal you. Go in peace. No guilt. So then we finish the story. We go back to Jairus, verse 35, while Jesus is still speaking. Some men come to him from the house of Jairus. Your daughter is dead. Why bother the teacher anymore? So during all of that, the daughter, she really was desperate, and she died. It's too late. Everybody is convinced in everyone's mind, it's over. It's too late. The lights go down. Everything turns black. Verse 36, Jesus turns the lights on again. Ignoring what they said, Jesus told the synagogue ruler, don't be afraid, just believe. It's not over. Not even in death. It's not over. I love that. Don't be afraid, just believe. This isn't too big for Jesus. There's nothing to worry about here. So Jesus goes to the girl. He finds her in her house, takes her by the hand, and raises her from the dead. No magic formula, nothing. He just speaks tenderly to the girl in his own native language, in Aramaic. Little girl, get up. Jesus has authority with a whisper, okay? It doesn't matter how he says it, and Jesus overcomes the grave. What everyone else assumes is impossible. Now, if we're looking at, you know, observing and what's going on here and interpreting and trying to understand, did this little girl really die, or was she sleeping? Anybody else have that question? Because Jesus comes and he says, she's not dead, she's just sleeping. Anybody else wonder what really happened there? Was she dead? Was she asleep? There are really two options. One option is that she was dead, but Jesus doesn't look at death the same way we look at it. It's not that big a deal. It's just the passageway into the next, right? And so this is not a big deal, guys. The other option is maybe she really was asleep, and Jesus is literally speaking the truth. She is sleeping. She's not dead. Now, here's why I think the first is what happened. She was dead, dead. Doornail, dead. Because you've got mourners there. A delegation came to the guy and say, it's too late. she's gone. They did understand what death was back then. They had the professional mourners were already there, wailing loudly. Like, that's what they did. They hired people to come in and honor this person's death with wailing. She was 12 years old. That makes a big, that's a big deal anywhere. Back then, now, she's 12 and she died. That's not supposed to happen. So they have these professional mourners wailing, woo, making a big scene. This is what they did. And we know they're professional mourners because of how quickly it changed. Jesus said, she's asleep. They laugh. They laugh. They're mourning professionally, okay? There's not really a real heart in it, because if you're mourning your daughter's death and somebody says something like that, you're not going to laugh. You might be angry. You might just ignore it. You just laugh. You're out of your mind. Everybody believes she was dead. I believe she was dead. But whatever the case, what Jesus did was a big deal and a very clear statement that Jesus has power that no one else has. When you bring these two stories together, there's Jairus and his situation, an interruption of this unnamed woman, and then back to Jairus again. What does God intend for us to learn from these two stories that are just kind of mashed together? What does he want us to get out of this, to understand? I keep coming back to the mind and heart of Jesus as we study. Give me the mind and heart of Jesus. Help me to know your heart here. What do we see? Yeah, it's not about who you are, how much money you have, how high you are on the totem pole. Everybody matters to God. Who's more important to Jesus? I think you nailed it, Bill. Jesus doesn't play favorites, does he? Even when we think he should. Jesus is deeply concerned for this little girl who comes from a powerful family in town. He's just as concerned for this woman who everybody's been steering clear of for 12 years. And he has time for both, right? Vanessa. Why does he do the one publicly and the one he goes in and doesn't let other people in? There are probably a few reasons. I would suggest one reason. You're going to find this theme of secrecy in the Gospel of Mark. Jesus does an amazing thing. He says, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. And I think it's the Gospel of John that continues to say his time has not yet come. His time had not yet come. That if too much got out, the culmination that he came for would happen too fast. So in the Jewish region, that's where he says, don't tell anybody, don't tell anybody. With the nut, the lunatic in Gentile territory, he said, you go tell everybody, because that wasn't going to affect things in terms of the synagogue rulers and the religious leaders and the Pharisees. And his testimony wasn't going to affect that at all. But if too many people were telling these things, the religious authorities would put the kibosh on it sooner than they were supposed to. Now, then you have the factor of he told them not to tell, and they told anyway, right? So that's part of it. I think another part in why only a few came in is because they're the ones who believed. They're the ones who believed that, you know, Jesus' closest disciples and the parents. I can't say that for sure, but what difference does faith make? It makes a big difference. It makes a big difference. Don't be afraid. Just believe. Now, does that sort of answer your question? Not really. Not really. We can talk more. These two people are on opposite ends of the social spectrum, but Jesus doesn't treat them any differently. They do have something in common, though. They do have something in common, which is what we've been talking about. Right? What's their one thing in common? It's faith, right? They come to Jesus. They both seek him out because they believe he can help them. Now, do you realize that both of these people were both under pressure not to approach Jesus? The synagogue ruler, what were his friends thinking about Jesus? This wasn't cool. Jesus was not cool with the synagogue rulers. You don't do that. We're against him. He's against us. We're against him. But he went in spite of that pressure. The woman, she's unclean. She's supposed to stay away from everybody. But both of them believe Jesus enough to push through that and to approach him, desperate for his help, because they believed he was the one who could help, the only one. They believed Jesus blessed them. Does that still happen? Does Jesus still bless in that way when we believe? Does God still answer the desperate prayers of those who believe he has the answer they'll need? It's kind of a tough question because he doesn't always answer the way we want him to. There's certain things that just we're convinced this must be God's will, and it's not always. So does that mean he's gone, not answering? I'm convinced that faith is still the difference in whether Jesus is involved in my life or not. If I believe he is and come to him in faith, then he is active in my life. And I believe that is still very much how it works today, not just then, but today. And so a couple weeks ago, I had passed around this yellow sheet. It says, I'd like to share how God's been at work in my life, because I believe many of you have stories of what God has been doing. And we want to celebrate that. We want to hear about that. We want to glorify God because he is still active. And we want some of you who God is not very involved in your life to hear this, that this is possible, not just for me as the synagogue ruler, that this is possible for a lot of people, for anybody. Jesus doesn't pick favorites. And so Alicia had put her name on the list, and I heard a little bit about her story, and so I asked if she would share a little bit of that with us right now. So Alicia, would you share? Pick a microphone, any microphone, and Jake will work wonders. Thank you.
This one looks my height. I'll go there. Okay. There we go. Hi, everybody. It's been a little while since I've spoken in front of a group, so forgive me. My heart's hammering a little bit. God has worked a tremendous, I don't know if you want to call it miracle, a testimony through my life in the last couple years. I have had my ups and downs. I am not perfect. I had left the church for a while. I came back. But more recently, my primary, I don't know what to call it, blessing was financial, but it's also my life. It's my job. My entire life turned around. I have a crazy schedule. I have a family. And I just want to tell you how that went down, this massive change. And it was something I would have never seen coming. Honest to God, I never would have seen it coming. Back when I graduated high school, I know I'm kind of young, but I did graduate high school over 10 years ago, so it's been a while. When I graduated high school, I found a job that to me seemed perfect. It was a little mom and pop shop. It was decent pay, great hours. I loved my job. It challenged me. It was fun. Loved the people I work with. And I worked there for almost 7 years. And things went really bad. About 5 years through that, things started to change. The management changed. Business got handed down from one generation to the next. A new manager was hired on that knew nothing about the business, and that was kind of hard for me. I'll admit, I had my pride. I'd been there for a long time. This was really hard for me to take. And I stuck with it, said, hey, God, you know what? You found me this job. I'm going to stick with this. I feel like this is where I should be. Tried to change with the times, and eventually it got so bad, I actually had a nervous breakdown. One day, just everything went bad. I had been getting tired of my boss, tired of my manager, and then my car broke down. My husband and I were car sharing. We were both working full time. My car broke down. For 3 months, I didn't have a car. So I had my mom picking me up to take me to work because she didn't work, and then my husband was picking me up at night. It was very stressful. It was very frustrating. My son was in a private daycare, home daycare. But things were working out. I was like, okay, we're getting through this. One morning at 4 a.m., my babysitter calls me. She's in the hospital. She will not be available to watch my child anymore. She has a debilitating disorder. We're done. 4 a.m. I don't have a sitter. I don't have a car. I lost it. I went into work. I cried. I broke down right there in the office. I said, I need to take a leave of absence. I don't know how long I'll be gone. And I did. I took a leave of absence. It was 2 weeks. Then it was 4 weeks. It was 6 weeks. Just the thought of going back to work made me shake involuntarily in my own home and cry. I could not go back to this place. I couldn't even go there to say hello to work, anything. So I wound up handing in my resignation. Didn't have a job. Didn't have a car. I was really in trouble. But I prayed. I was like, God, you know, I don't know why this is happening to me. This is horrible. This was the worst place I'd ever been in my life. And I believed that somehow I would come out of it. My husband, he doesn't have the same strong faith I have. I'll admit, he was like, why is this happening? This isn't fair. Why is this happening? And I said, I don't know, but I know we're going to be okay. I don't know how, but I just had that inner peace. I knew, despite all of this I was going through, things were going to turn out all right. And it didn't go right away. I'll admit that. This is a long journey. After I finally quit my job, I just started putting in resumes everywhere. I was on medication. I was in therapy. I was going through a lot. I had been mentally broken by the people that were supervising me in this company. And it was really hard to bounce back from. I couldn't focus. I didn't have energy. I felt broken. I had nothing left. And one of the job resumes I sent out finally came back. I got a call from Target. You guys all know Target, Walmart, big corporation. And I had never wanted to work at a retailer like that. I'd worked at one in the past, but I was like, you know what? I'm running out of ideas. So I applied. They called me, came in, had a great interview. Can you start Monday? Absolutely. I desperately need money. I need a job. You guys are willing to hire me Monday. My dad had found a vehicle for me that was not the greatest, but it ran. I had wheels again. So I gave it a try. I was like, you know what? What were the odds that they called me in and hired me immediately? So I go in. I start at Target. I've worked there. I worked there for almost 2 years. And I build up my confidence again. I learned to have faith in people again. I had some great coworkers, a great job situation. The pay was very small. The hours, really thin. But I found my confidence again in this place. They helped to build me up and to make me a stronger person again. And gave me the strength to step out and try to find a good job, something that would help take care of my family. We were in debt up over our heads at this point. We were not able to live our lifestyle with the income we had. My husband was shouldering a lot of the burden. He has a good job with good pay and good insurance. But without me having a job, you know, it was just really rough. I finally went ahead and start putting out my resume again. I tried to get in at some really good places that I knew would pay well, would take care of me. Rejection, rejection, rejection. I had a few interviews, still rejected. I'm like, God, I don't get it. You know, I did everything I was supposed to. I'm applying at places. I'm going. I'm doing my best here. I don't understand what's going on. And I continued to pray and to hope, and I just knew something would work. When it was time, something would work out. And right around Christmas time this past year, a friend of mine, it was random. He told me what his Christmas bonus was at his new job that he had worked since last August. So he'd only been there for a couple of months. They got a Christmas bonus that blew my socks off. It was more than I had made the previous year, basically. It was at Target because I didn't make that much. And it was then that something clicked in my brain. And I thought, why haven't I applied at this place? He works there. He tells me it's great. They treat you like a person, not a number. The pay is good. The bonuses are good. Why have I not applied at this place? And he had been working there for months, and it had never occurred to me. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to put in my application here. I don't think I'm going to get the job. I don't really think I'm qualified. I don't think I'm able to do that kind of work necessarily. But you know what? I'm going to give it a try, see what happens. I applied. The next day, I got a phone call. I had an interview. And they set up the interview. I went in, interviewed one time with five people. It's a pretty crazy system. And they said, okay, you know, we're going to call you tomorrow to bring you back for a second interview. I'm like, I can't believe this. I got a second interview. This is great. Went back for my second interview, talked to some more people. Okay, now we got to send your info up to corporate, see what happens. And they did, and I sat on pins and needles. They didn't get back to me for a month. I kid you not. It was 4 weeks. I was told it should only be two, but it was around Christmas, so I'm like, all right, it's the holidays. But what are the odds I get this position? And sure enough, they called me just after the new year and offered me a job. I cried. Right there on the phone, I cried. And the woman on the other side of the phone, she's like, are you okay? I said, yeah, I just can't believe I actually got this job. I am so happy. You have no idea. And sure enough, I went to start that job. And it was hard work. I went to physical labor. And you see me here, right? I mean, just, you know, not just as a person up here telling you my testimony, but seriously, I am a skinny, scrawny little thing. There's not much here. There is some muscle, but it's not a lot. And I'm working a warehouse position. I am lifting 70-pound boxes multiple times a day. I'm lifting 30 pounds here and 40 pounds there, and that's all I'm doing. I'm lifting. I'm moving heavy things. It's crazy. And I'm telling God, man, I am going sore every night. Every night I'm going home super sore. My muscles hurt. My shoulders hurt. My feet hurt. Everything hurts. But you know what? You got me this job, and it was an impossible job to get. So I'm just going to roll with it. And I got to take a step back for a moment here and let you know that this place, I found out when I actually went for orientation, they hire, of the people that come there, less than 1% of the people that apply, that send in their application or their resume, actually get hired, and only 2% of the people who have an interview actually get hired. So between their percentages and the person that I just happened to be with my experience, I still couldn't tell you how I got in there. But I do have some ideas that God, as he led me through the job that I worked for nearly 7 years, helped me, because it gave me computer experience. It gave me knowledge of product. It gave me so many things that if I hadn't had those, I would not have gotten this job. I found out they look into longevity. They look into your experiences and those kind of things. And even Target. When I worked at Target, I did a lot of lifting. I unloaded the truck. It got me physically in shape. If I had not done that job there at that time, I would not have been physically prepared for this job. So while I didn't see it all that time, God knew. He said, hey, I'm putting you in this job for this reason. And you know what? You're done there. You've learned all you can learn there. I'm pulling you out. And you won't leave willingly because you like it. So I'm going to have to allow things to happen. I'm going to have to allow you to have a nervous breakdown so that you finally will leave that job so I can show you where you're really supposed to be. And with Target, all right, I'm going to let you do this because this is going to help you with your ultimate goal. But now your time there is done, so I'm going to light a fire under you and tell you it's time to move on. It's time to keep going. And I found New Line with this packing job, and job was absolutely amazing. I worked hard, got my 40-plus hours a week, making a good hourly wage. I was like, all right, this is great. I love this. I do feel happy here. But I was turning to God again because my body was just not able to hold up under the stress. I was trying. I was doing my best. I was like, I will do what I must because this is where you put me. I can't imagine I'm not here for a reason. This is where I'm supposed to be. And just when I thought that I really couldn't deal with it anymore, the physical trauma, one of my supervisors came to me and offered me a clerking job. The hardest thing I've got to lift is a ream of paper. I love it. I'm typing. I'm doing the mental work. The work that I was trained to do back in that first job after high school is aiding me now. They said they have not been more impressed with a trainee in a very long time. I'm picking up on things very quickly. And this was my final answer to prayer. I have waited, 4 years I've been really, really praying about this and really having faith that God would guide me where I was going to go. But realistically, this is over 10 years in the making that I have put my trust in God that he would give me to the place that I needed to go. And just every step of the way, no matter what happened, I just followed it. If it worked out and it seemed too good to be true, then obviously it was bigger than me. I would never have gotten into this job on my own, never. It was way bigger than I ever was. So I hope that it encourages you a little bit. I'm working 1 month now in my new position, and I have not been this happy in ages. I'm happy. My husband is happy. My son is happy. Like, it's just amazing. And financially, even though I know that's not supposed to be our biggest worry in this world, financially, it is a massive blessing to us, and not in the way that we're out there buying fancy cars and stuff. It's just keeping us afloat. But God really does work in amazing ways, and you just have to trust him.
Thank you, Alicia. You may have noticed that the tunnel can be long, right? And the darkness can be deep, but God flips on a light. We have to keep looking and watching, and ultimately that tunnel, we're still in it. We're still in that tunnel, and the light's going to break through. We sing all these songs about the end, and someday it's going to be even more incredibly amazing. But along the way, he's growing our faith. If we look to him and trust him and keep coming to him and keep trusting. So that's encouraging. Thank you, Alicia. I want to go back to the first six verses of chapter 6. This is where we find the contrast. We've heard from Jairus, we've heard from the unnamed woman, and now we've heard from Alicia, who has a name. Now I want you to hear what happens with this other group. Mark 6:1, Jesus left there and went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. Sounds good so far. Where did this man get these things, they asked. What's this wisdom that's been given him that even does miracles? And then it starts to degenerate. Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, only in his hometown, among his relatives, and in his own house is a prophet without honor. He could not do any miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them, and he was amazed at their lack of faith. Verse 1, many who heard him were amazed. Verse 2, verse 3, and they took offense at him. Jesus didn't do anything different in his hometown than he did in other towns. What's the difference? He was amazed at their lack of faith. They didn't believe. Comparing this with the previous two examples, do you see the difference faith makes? Do you see the difference faith makes? Not just faith in anything, faith in Jesus. When people come to Jesus believing, amazing things happen. What happened with this group of people? Why does Jesus say only in his hometown, among his relatives, and in his own house is a prophet without honor? What's the difference there? I believe that it's when people become over familiar with Jesus and under amazed that this happens. They no longer see Jesus for who he really is. They don't believe he has anything significant to offer. Who is he? We know his brothers. We know his sisters. We know his mother. He's a carpenter. They're over-familiar and under-amazed. And in that environment, the power of God will not be evident. Could God do wondrous things there? Yes, he could, but he won't. That happened in Jesus' hometown. And if we want to think about application, that happens in every church across America. Over-familiar, under-amazed. That's our story sometimes. We are over-familiar and under-amazed. Watch out for that. So this part is for those of you who grew up in church, maybe. Some of you heard stories read about Jesus from your mother while you were still in the womb. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. You just have to watch out that you don't become over-familiar and under-amazed. When you grow up in it, if you come into the church, if you come into to Jesus later in life, you're not as likely to fall into this. They grew up with Jesus. They saw him as a kid. They saw him when he was 12, 13, 14, 15. They never saw any sin, but they were over-familiar and under-amazed. So we have to watch out. In the church, we talk about him all the time. We have communion. We sing these songs. We do this stuff. But if we stop believing Jesus really has something to offer us, he's not going to have much to offer us. And if you really believe, and this is where we fall into, if we really believe that when I need something, it's up to me to make it happen, you're going to miss out. You're going to miss out on being amazed by the power of God. So just be careful. Don't let that be you. God intends to be personally and powerfully involved in your life. That's what he wants to do. This isn't just something from then. He wants to be personally, powerfully involved in our lives. And to hear Alicia's story, she had to walk a long way in hardship. It wasn't easy. But God opened the door. And he's doing that with us. And a bunch of you have stories too. Sometimes we forget the stories. We need to remember our stories, what God has done in the past, and be encouraged by other people's stories. So we wanna hear more. We want to hear more. So I am going to keep this sheet out. If you've been thinking, yeah, I have something to share, put it on the sheet. It'll be on the back table later on. But we want to share these stories with each other, what God is doing. He's been at work in my life. I'll just share just a short testimony here as we wrap up. I've been amazed. God has been specifically working in my life, and he's lifted my spirit. I mean, that my family has been in a struggle and a little bit of a difficult time the past several months. And I don't always talk about it, and I'm not going to necessarily share everything because it might have to do with other people that you might know. And so, like, we go through things, and I try to be as open as I can, and I am fairly open. But God has been ministering to me. And in specific ways, I had given one of the kids' classes a pastor's challenge. Memorize a chunk of verses from Psalm 119. They picked the verses, and I decided I'm going to memorize with them. They just happened to pick a section that in three places talks about affliction. Do you think they were like, yeah, I'm going through some affliction, so we want to pick this passage about affliction? Do you think 8-year-olds are doing that? No, they picked the shortest section they could find. Right? That's great. But I memorized that. God put that in my heart. And one of the verse 71, it was good for me to be afflicted so that I might learn your decrees. And then the other one, a few verses later, verse 75, this one was the biggest one for me. The psalmist says this with confidence. In faithfulness, you have afflicted me. If you would take some time to process that, it is your faithfulness, God, that has brought this affliction into my life. It changes how you look at things. Is God that involved in your life? He is that involved in my life, and I'm so thankful. He also brought me to a book called When People Are Big and God Is Small. Mentioned that to a few of you. Several people here have read this book. I've heard about this book for years and I've never read it. God was saving it for now and showing me sometimes people are bigger in your mind than they should be and God is too small. You can almost get the whole gist of the book just with the title. But it is a good book and there's more to it. You could benefit from reading it too. But man, God showed me a weakness in my life. And through that book, he used it to make me stronger. Wow, there was a blind spot right there. And he wanted to show me. And he used the situation to show me. And then I have to mention just how many of you were that blessing to me. Where, you know, going through a dark time, struggle, like, what's going on? Why? And God just, people are just popping up. And part of it was just seeing, wow, I can really see God working in your life. And I can see how God is stirring in your life right now. And just seeing that is encouraging when you see that happen. Other things were more specific, where somebody would come to me like, you know what? I just want to pray with you. Can we pray right now? Yeah. And God brought just different things, a phone call maybe, or an offer to help. There was some ministry needs, and like, you know, I noticed there's this need. This isn't happening. How about if I do that? Cool. Usually it's like, I'm the one that's supposed to see that and be like, who can I recruit to fill this? It didn't work that way. It's like, hey, I'll help. And then one day somebody just drops off a piece of pie. Like, you want to get me, just bring me a piece of pie. So just little things, big things. God brought brand new people into the church specifically to encourage me. These people are encouraging. Like, it was coming from all over the place. And I'm sure probably it's not the only reason why God brought that person into this church. There may be other reasons too than just to encourage me. But that was a big deal for me. And just seeing how God is working. So a bunch of you have blessed me as part of this. You have been an answered prayer. You have been the power of God expressed in my life. So I just want to encourage you. You may have become over familiar and under amazed. We need to get back to believing Jesus is my help. He is my help. He has my answer. It's not just here's my list and here you go. Like, it didn't work that way with Elisha. She didn't necessarily pick that path, but he did. And it's a good path. So we got to be watching for it. So I was in a needy time. I went to Jesus. He answered me in unexpected ways. He's still doing that. So this isn't just for Jairus. It's not just for this unnamed woman or Elisha or me. This is for us. This is for the children of God. We're his children. Those who come to Jesus in faith, we become his children. And so maybe I'm more like the synagogue ruler in the story. Maybe you feel like the unnamed woman. It doesn't matter. Jesus doesn't do this. This is for anybody who will come to Jesus believing. So that thing you're struggling with, that thing you're dealing with, you can keep trying to fix it yourself if you want. But Jesus is a whole lot better at it. He really is. So bring it to him. It is absolutely amazing the difference that Jesus makes when we believe he wants to help and wants to be involved. God, I pray that you would show every person here that you are real, you are powerful, that none of us would fall into that pit of being like those in Jesus' hometown, believing that I'm going to have to do it myself because Jesus doesn't really have much to offer. God, don't let us just come to church on Sundays and then worry ourselves through the rest of the week. But let us come to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, because he saw us. Thank you that you love us just like you loved that woman, just like you loved the daughter. Draw us close to you, God, and help us never to take our eyes off of you. You're our lighthouse. You're the strong one. In Jesus' name.